Watch this. No way!
Hello and welcome back to the Cookie Jar Golf Podcast. I am, as Sam Williams would say, your host, Tom Mills. And today I'm joined by Sam Williams.
Hi.
And bold Bruce Fitzpatrick.
We say bold. What do you mean?
Is that with bold. An O or with an A? Is that with an O or with an
That's
A?
Because it's I, bold.
Yeah. I'll take that. Hello.
You're looking B-A-L-D, I must admit, Tom.
Who, me?
Yeah, Lid's looking pretty sharp, actually.
I've just actually managed to get a haircut, which is 6 months in the making, I think.
I didn't think we dressed smart for pod, but you've really pulled it out of the bag tonight. Well,
this feels like an emergency pod, doesn't it? I mean, you know, we don't very often pod, you know, at this sort of hour to just pump something out. But I feel like hot off the press, there's a news story here.
It is
here.
An emergency
Oh,
pod.
I think it is.
I mean,
the tone of your messages in the WhatsApp group absolutely conveyed urgency there, Sam. So I think
there's always urgency when it comes to podding, Bruce. Anyway, before we jump into it, can we have a quick word from our new official, unofficial sponsors of the jar?
Certainly.
Who is it this week?
Yes, yeah. We'd like to say sincere thanks to Whoop for allowing us to pay the typical annual rate or monthly rate, I should say, for your straps.
I've got a question. This, we're all in on Whoop. I was completely
all
done
jar
by like
Whoop
the
presents.
I was done by the marketing, so I felt like if I was going to spend £30 a month, I just couldn't do it. So I just thought I'll bowl in for like the 18-month contract and then get it for like £24 a month or whatever, but ultimately I end up spending a boatload more than if I'd just gone for the £30 a month. Did you just go for the 6 months, Sam?
Yeah, I've gone 6 months, £30. I mean, the thing is, it's kind of like that virtuous circle with this section of the pod. The fantastic thing about the Nespresso Virtue, I mean, I've saved so much on takeaway coffee that I've now got enough money to spend on a health and safety gizmo to tell me how I'm getting on. We're all
safety,
say,
health and safety gizmo.
Whatever we're
making
it
like a high-vis piece of equipment, like well a jacket being. And a hard hat. What are you?
Turn of phrase. However, we are at different spectrums on
it was
the
a poor turn of phrase.
Yeah. Okay. But I would say you boys are in better shape than me. So it'd be interesting to see the value it adds. A lot of people have come back to us with a few comments. A lot of people really like it. So I'm excited. Obviously, me and Tom are on our Whoop journey, starting that this week, aren't we? Whereas Bruce, I think you've been rocking it.
I'm very
it
excited because tomorrow I get my calibration. Because you've got like 4 days for a calibration. So you just
is this
wearing
what it tells
like
you
a
recovery stats?
I don't know what it tells me in 4 days. I don't know what it does. I'm wearing it.
People keep
it
saying it knows when you've had a skinful as well. I know we're going to get to the pod in a minute, Bruce, but I can see you're anxious. But I am curious
it does,
to
yeah.
know how it knows when you've been boozing, because you don't tell it what you're eating, do you?
No, but it, you know, it's quite well known that booze affects your sleep. So
oh,
it
so
obviously shows up
between
with
the lines. Right.
With a, well, no, it won't say, it won't flash up with that. You've been drinking alcohol. You can no longer be a Whoop member. Like, it doesn't do anything like that. It just says, you've had pretty shit sleep tonight and your recovery score is pretty low. And put two and two together, if you've had, in your words, a skinful the night before, then obviously there's pretty good, you know, there's a pretty good causal relationship going on there. But one thing that I would actually like to put out there, there's been some debate, and I don't know if that's why guys like McIlroy and Justin Thomas, and in fact a lot of other pros on the PGA Tour, wear the bicep band. But I do think that the strain rating you get from playing golf when wearing a Whoop is a little higher than it probably should be, because of obviously the bit of forearm tension you have when you're holding a golf club. I think it maybe does slightly overestimate. I'm happy to be corrected on that, but if you have the typical standard wrist strap, I don't know whether it overestimates your strain score slightly, particularly if you put an absolute death grip on the club like me and your knuckles
sort of
going white.
Sort you would bring into the pod, yeah. To be fair. I mean, someone else will have to illuminate us on that one.
You can tell it you're doing golf though, can't you? And it can then dial it back. Is that right?
Well, yeah, but it's always slightly different, isn't it? Because depending on someone's fitness, like if you and I both went and run a mile, we'd burn a different number of calories, and the same would apply to golf as well. So, I mean, yeah, you can get really really sort of specific with it. I just think it'd be quite amusing if, you know, we rocked up at our home club with bicep bands on to carry the whoop on. And
it's almost
just
as bad as wearing blue tape over your wrist, isn't it, to a club fitting? But anyway, let's move on from
hey,
that.
No, that's not fair. They were hitting off a hard mat.
Shots fired.
Okay, so this isn't what the pod's about anyway. So moving on from our official unofficial sponsor, let's dive into it. Player bonus pool, player impact program. What are we thinking? And first, what is it? Let's talk about it. Because I think this is a good one for us to unpick.
Yeah, so my understanding is that this is a bonus pool of $40 million that is going to be distributed between a fixed number of players. I feel like it's somewhere between 6 and 8, something like that. Or maybe, I don't know if it goes as high as 10. It's purely based on the level of fan engagement and just general kind of interest in golf and the PGA Tour events that they drive. And that's literally all it's calculated on. And it's done on there's a few metrics going on. There's meltwater moments, there's Q rating, there's a Google search popularity and an MVP index, which I think has some correlation with Jordan Spieth's dad. And it's essentially your engagement on social. I know it's all terribly convoluted.
What do you mean Jordan Spieth's dad?
I think Sean Spieth is he founded the company that created the MVP, you know, social digital media index, but literally it is totally divorced from how someone finishes in a tournament. You know, it's just how popular and how engaging is this player, and we're going to pay them appropriately.
Well, I mean, yeah. And there's Nielsen, obviously a large consultant firm who I didn't even know they do that. That's obviously a thing that exists, and Nielsen brand ranking for these players that tells you kind of as well, all that engagement stuff. I mean, are you surprised? Are we surprised by it?
It's reportedly in response to the Golf Premier League that they were thinking about putting together, which, to be fair, has had like a small amount of airtime last year. I remember us talking about this on the pod last year for a little bit. And
it's been ice. I mean, been on ice though since then, basically, hasn't it?
We don't really know what's going on behind the scenes, but it doesn't seem like to be much going on, does there? But I think in a response to that, you know, and certainly what's going on in the Middle East, where the European Tour, some of these sort of Qatar and places like that, chucking appearance fees at players, and it's tend to be working. I think they've just gone down the route of let's get these guys who earn a shitload of money, more money, and hopefully they won't leave us.
Well, what surprises me about it is that it doesn't seem to be contingent on appearance. So it is they've called it a player impact program, but it's essentially a bonus scheme from what I can gather. There's loads of facets to this, but it doesn't seem to be contingent on people playing at certain events week in, week out. When I first saw the headlines, I thought, this is quite interesting. So they're basically going to incentivize the world's best or the world's most interesting players to rock up to different tournaments. But that's clearly not the case. It's really, you know, one of the things that's talked about in there is Woods will almost certainly get that first spot, which I think is going to be $8 million, even though
that was based on 2019 numbers, though.
Yeah, but he still would be, wouldn't he? Let's face it. Like, if you put a picture on Instagram, who's going to get more likes out of Brooks Koepka, Justin Thomas, and Tiger Woods? It's going to be Tiger Woods, isn't it?
Surely they can't do it to a player that doesn't play.
Well, I think that's the big issue with it, is maybe they might confine it to a certain number of tour starts. I mean, I get your point there, Sam, about appearance fees, but I think there's going to be a strong correlation there. And I don't know if they've released much of the detail on how it's going to be calculated, but presumably if you're hitting the engagement numbers on, say, 35 events a year and you're packing out the schedule like that, you're going to be, you know, popping up in some of these calculations, in some of these MVP indexes and so on, far more regularly. And so your score is going to be higher than if you just, you know, rock up to 15 events a year and have a really big impact. I guess, you know, to a certain extent, if you're playing really well and you're fairly endearing, then you're going to do well out of it. Patrick Reed is probably absolutely kicking himself at the moment. It'd be interesting to see if he goes through a complete image revamp, because obviously, you know, he's a top 10 player in the world at the moment, but by the sounds of things, won't be getting a payout at all from this player impact program.
I don't think he's sitting by the phone, is he? Let's be honest.
No. But yeah, it's just, I mean, the short-term trigger, I think, has got to be the European Super League discussions that we've seen in the mm-hmm. world of football earlier this week. And there's, you know, fair arguments there to be made about how golf probably doesn't have a comparable fan base where people are going to start turning up outside, you know, the equivalent of Anfield, burning an Anfield jersey and getting the owners to kind of backtrack on, you know, that just can't really happen in golf. So, yeah, it seems like a smart move by the PGA Tour to try and head this thing off at the pass.
I think that's ridiculous. I think that's a ridiculous statement. How is it a smart move? I mean, it's like, it's almost a self-perpetuating thing. Whoever's at the top is going to get Google most. Whoever's, the Q rating is based on popularity with brands.
It's so not quite that
achieving
way.
Is going to have brand appeal.
No, that's not like, right. That's not right. Right. Why does Tony Romo get a sponsor's exemption to... I can't remember the event they play at the West Coast. It might be Riviera in the past. I can't remember exactly where. Sponsors exemptions tell you they don't select, you know, the best amateur golfers or the best players that haven't got exemption to the event. They pick people that are going to make it more of a star-studded and entertaining field, don't they? Who's the guy
Tony
who's got
Romo
the,
is not
going to
be in
nut
this bonus
swing? Point. Who's the guy? Is he a South Korean golfer? This is where I'm looking terribly amateur. Yeah.
No, Ho Sung Choi.
Yeah. So another perfect example of someone who comes in under sponsors' exemptions on a standalone basis, probably not good enough golf. So I think, yeah, obviously the world's best players typically happen to be some of the most popular golfers. But I wouldn't say it's a hard and fast rule. And I think that probably leads us into a discussion is why is it the top ten players or whatever?
Yeah, you name me. It's top 10 players and the top one gets $8 million. You name me more than three players that are outside the world top 10 that are the most popular players on the planet.
Spieth?
Tiger.
He's going to be in the top 10 very shortly.
Tiger,
okay, I'll take that.
Are we taking Spieth on the chin? Hang on, are you taking Spieth on the chin? Because
okay, he's world number. Yeah, okay, yeah.
He's world number 29, I think.
Phil Mickelson.
Phil won't be in that top 10. No way.
In the what? In terms of most engaging, mate.
In terms of most engagement, one.
Mate, for a sponsor, he's googling dream at your event.
Asked an absolutely stupid question, Mills, and yeah, we're going to tear you down because you said I'd been making ridiculous statements. You've been firing from the hip at your fellow cookie jar members.
I'm on a warpath today.
Yeah, you're on an absolute warpath. I absolutely agree with what you're saying, though. It doesn't sit right because I think there's an idea or an underlying kind of view of golf that it's a very fair sport. And if you go and put together the best round possible on that day, you're going to, you know, have a good round. And if you go and do that over four rounds, you're going to win the event. And if you go and do that at enough events, you're going to make it to the next tour up. And if you do that again, you're going to make it to the tour up after that. And you're going to, basically, it's a fair sport where if you play well, it's objectively measured on the scorecard. You can rise to the top of the world rankings. Whereas, I don't know, something like football or rugby, where there's a huge subjective element in terms of the coaches and the scouts' minds as to whether, you know, you're worth kind of picking as a player. Dolph hasn't really had that problem. And so I think to start rewarding people financially on the basis of things that are outside of their performance just doesn't seem to sit right with a lot of people.
But just taking us back, What is it? What do you think it's there for? Because we can pick it apart in terms of the mechanics of it, how it's put together, who's going to, you know, whether players should or shouldn't be in there. What is it trying to achieve? Is it there to incentivize players to be more edgy, for want of a better term, or to develop their own brands and create following? Or do you think it's there to, you know, to drive more kind of participation at events in kind of the stuff that isn't maybe the, you know, kind of WGCs and majors, and try and get people like Koepka kind of out of bed for a, you know, a Milwaukee Open on a Thursday. I don't know. What is the...
Well, it's to protect the PGA Tour, fundamentally, isn't it? It's to protect
Which
the PGA
needs
Tour.
No protection, let's face it.
Well, this Premier Golf League stuff, I do think, you know, there was clearly some alarm bells ringing there that you didn't get.
And how do you think that protects it? Just basically puts an umbrella around those top players and says, if you're taking this money, you're not going to PGL.
I think I think it maybe encourages players to just buy into the PGA Tour and identify with the PGA Tour more closely, doesn't it? If you're out there kind of pushing content and pushing engagement, in order to kind of secure a cut of this bonus pool.
Yeah, I suppose the flip side to it, and there is some probably some business sense to it, because if you are forcing players down a route where they build a bit bigger and better brand, because that's what they're being incentivized to do, and suddenly, you know, you feel like, oh, yeah, I really fancy traveling 6 hours to go see Patrick Cantlay play golf because I really like him and I really like his brand, then suddenly you're getting more ticket revenue and you're getting more ability to sell, which is essentially what it's all about. So there is probably a reason to that in the first place. But Patrick Cantlay, somebody particularly that, you know, has barely been outside the top 10 for the last few
years.
He's
not going to get near this money, is he?
No, he's going to be nowhere like near this money.
You know, people think he's an outside bet when it comes to a major. They're like, I even fancy an outside like Cantlay. And I'm like, mate, he's literally one of the most consistent players week in, week out on the PGA Tour and one of the best players on the planet. You know, and that's the mental thing with this stuff.
It's definitely going to encourage more showmanship and more, there's going to be more kind of statements given of the kind of ilk of Rory McIlroy and how he likes to be a bit of a spokesman for the game. It's definitely going to push a lot of, you know, top players to become entertainers, I should say. You know, Bryson DeChambeau hitting that drive on the sixth hole at Bay Hill and giving it the two hands in the air and getting the crowd pumped up. Moments like that, I imagine, will, you know, really boost engagement pretty significantly on the PGA Tour's social channels with players who aren't, or with people who aren't necessarily big golf fans. And actually, that's maybe where I'd probably I'll walk back some of my earlier comments there about Patrick Reed, because I wonder whether, you know, engagement's a pretty broad, open-ended term, and I wonder whether controversy and clicks on Patrick Reed doing some funny business in a bunker, or I don't know, celebrating in his Captain America style, will also drive a lot of engagement. And so maybe through slightly unorthodox means, he's able to tap into that bonus pool as well. There'll be people who are fan favorites, like the Rory McIlroys, who are just adored by a lot of people because they seem to be such genuine, kind of considerate, compassionate people. But then there'll be people like Patrick Reed who are maybe making headlines for the wrong reasons, but who are also driving engagement nonetheless.
I don't watch wrestling, but you know, the baddies in wrestling would be a great example, wouldn't they? They'd probably be some of the biggest, you know, kind of brands. Sorry, Mo.
I don't think real men call them baddies either, but was it Boo... Was it Boo Weekly that did the sort of Happy Gilmore down the putter? Was it Boo Weekly a few years ago? You know, if you take this to an extreme, there is a world somewhere in some alternative universe where, taking this ridiculously extreme, you could see someone who's like 50th in the world or whatever start doing some redonkulous stuff on the golf course just to get coverage. You know what I mean?
No. I think. See, I don't. No, why I'm not buying they? That. But I'm not buying
cash,
that.
Is it? It's not enough cash for them to do
but,
it.
But also, I think that's just a kind of straw man argument there, because fundamentally, the best players in the world, you're going to be picking out of the best players in the world. And I know someone like Phil Mickelson is outside the top 100, but to all intents and purposes, he's still a bloody good golfer. You know, so not to take shots here, but Rick Shields, for example, who has got, you know, 1.5 million people on YouTube subscribing to him, he's not going to be going and tapping into the PGA Tour bonus pool because he's clearly not a good enough competitor to get onto the PGA Tour. And I think you could say the same about a lot of other people who do great work and have popular YouTube channels and huge followings.
Cookie Jar Golf, another great example for you there.
Yeah, to be fair, you did say you could take down Mickelson around Blackwell Golf Club. So, you know, maybe steady, if you do steady. That. Maybe.
He asked us to take down Rory recently.
I was goaded into that. I don't buy that there's an incentive for, I mean, let's pull someone out at random, you know, Carlos Ortiz to start wearing a sombrero when he's playing golf to sort of like, you know, cash in on some sort of unique sort of personality and drive a brand that's going to drive engagement and, you know, clicks and stuff. You're not going to see it. It's not, these guys are competing for very significant sums of money, aren't they, week in, week out?
I have with this is it's a closed shop, because if you tune in, God, Bruce openly says he doesn't watch any golf because it's too boring for him. Well, I watch the shit that happens before the golf. You know, you can go PGA Live or whatever, and you press the red button, you can see what's featured groups.
Featured groups.
The featured groups are always containing one of Rory McIlroy, Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka. It's just a completely closed loop of people who are being handpicked. You know, they might have people with them, like other players who play with them, but they're always one of the top five players in the world, and they're handpicked to be followed, which is going to drive engagement. It's going to drive Twitter posts. It's going to drive Facebook posts. And ultimately, it's just self-fulfilling prophecy, isn't it? I just don't know how someone's going to break into it.
So let's just take Tiger out of the equation on this one just for a second, because he does transcend the game, and no one is going to deny that he would be by far and away, if he was fit and healthy and playing a remotely full schedule, he would be by far and away that number one spot who's taken home $8 million. But let's leave him out of it, right? I think it's inevitable that if you are one of the top five, top 10 players in the world, when as soon as you get down to those small margins, you're going to have the spotlight on you. And even Koepka, who just tries to avoid it at all costs, and doesn't really engage that much and give particularly great interviews. As you mentioned there, Mills, he's still in the featured groups on a lot of this TV coverage. And in a way, the story around him and the stuff he's putting, the focus on social media is around how he gives such curt interviews. So, yeah, I think to a certain extent, it's just incentivizing the best players in the world to engage a bit more and perhaps kind of grow the game, which is, you know, it's stuff that we could definitely get behind. I just think it is a bit galling when you see $40 million bonus pool for the most popular players on tour. The headline doesn't look great.
It's 10 players, isn't it?
10 players.
So you got 8 million going there, so it'll tail down to like a token to the top, half a mil. I mean, I know it's half a mil, it's quick when you say it, but you know, for the to someone that might occupy that spot, who might be like a Tony Finau or whatever, it is small change, is the fact of the matter. I mean, just put yourself in the shoes of a Jay Monahan or someone like that for a minute. How would you make it better then? So it sounds like, you know, neither of you are big supporters of it. How would you redirect it? Would you use it to try and...
It just smacks of desperation to me, if I'm perfectly honest. It just smacks of...
I love that. There's a bit of anger and a bit of Welsh inflection came out there. It absolutely smacks of desperation.
It's just... You know, it's a knee-jerk reaction to the Premier League, and it's not thinking that your product is good enough to hold on to the players that are there, in my opinion. I just think they're just bricking it, because the reality is, if Rory, Brooks, DJ, the top 10 in the world, plus another 10 selected others, all go to play in some super-duper new thing that's not the PGA, the PGA loses about 75% of its value overnight.
But in fairness, it is value exchange, isn't it? So, like, just playing devil's advocate here, the reason, Stuart Singh walks home with a $1 million check from Harbour Town is because there are players of that ilk teeing it up fairly frequently on the PGA Tour who are bringing a level of interest to the game that Stuart Singh isn't bringing to the game today, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, it is fair to say that in a world where corporate sponsorships, there's enough money washing through the system. Actually, it's just fair value exchange for the services they provide. They bring a brand to it. And, you know, it's easy for someone like Koepka, who again, hasn't got loads of money worries, I suspect, to say there's no reason Tiger should have all of that $40 million. He should have every penny. The only reason we're teeing it up this week is because Tiger did what he did in those kind of early 2000 years and stuff. There's no getting away from the fact that you look at $40 million and then you look at the number of people that are trying to create a career for themselves and trying to carve out a life as a professional golfer, or whether it's charities or grassroots development of the sport. I don't know. Maybe the onus is on the people who get the money. Maybe you're going to start seeing whether it's like McElroy or someone like that, start saying, well, okay, I've had this through in the bonus pool because of my social media presence, but I'm going to redirect the investment into a worthy cause or something like that. You're frowning, but I don't know. Do you see?
No, I get that.
I'd hope
that's the case. And actually flipping it around, I think what we haven't talked about is why are the PGA Tour fearing that players will go over to the Premier Golf League? What is it that Premier Golf League is offering? Well, yeah, I am concerned though. I mean, and that would be a real shame, I think, if you had some of the best players in the world who really were kind of swayed by the money, purely and simply by the money. Because, you know, I remember years and years ago them asking Gary Player, you know, would you rather win another major or £10 million? And obviously he was playing in a era of far reduced prize funds, and he just said straight away, major. And I feel like with a lot of the top guys, the prestige of the majors and certain other events is ultimately what they're competing for, because they've earned so much money that it's just like, I'm not going to be able to spend all of this. And it doesn't really enhance my kind of sense of meaning and purpose. But why is it that there seems to be kind of murmurings that people like McElroy and Rahm and Koepka and DJ have been swayed by, you know, lucrative pay packages? I mean, McElroy, to be fair, I probably shouldn't put in that category, because he said from day dot, I'm not going to Saudi Arabia. Someone like DJ is like, yeah, man, I'll go and do it. So I worry that there is probably, you know, too much money in golf, or certainly it's become, not there's too much money, but it's become too much of a driving factor in where top professionals play.
So there was a few interesting counter arguments. So some of the counter arguments, particularly in the States, have been saying, well, if you take the team, so you take the teams like, you know, whether it's NBA or NFL or Premier League, or whatever, these guys go into the first day of the season with some guaranteed revenue because they bring a level of attraction to an event. A PGA Tour player rocks up on the 1st of January. They have absolutely no revenue guaranteed. Now, okay, they might do through some sponsors, you know, some deals and sponsors they wear on their shirts, but they have, in terms of their appearance stuff, they don't get any money for that, right? So, you know, you could argue that really, you could flip it around the other way and say the PGA Tour is basically taking advantage of, you know, players appearing. Tom's doing his spinny finger thing. Sorry.
Your point is absolutely ridiculous. Because
why?
That's the second point. This podcast has been ridiculous. No,
because I understand what you're saying, that the revenue isn't guaranteed, but the revenue is guaranteed for the people that are going to perform well. It's not going to help the people that don't perform well. So it doesn't make any point. It doesn't help.
The Premier League team gets paid for playing in the Premiership. Like, you get that on day
they
one.
And they get a parachute payment if they go down. But this structure that they're proposing right now for the 10 most popular players is not going to help the people that aren't going to earn money.
Yeah.
So the argument is out the window, because it's just not
going to... They just tend not to focus on people, you know, midway through an event who are 12 over par and about to miss the cut. Like, doesn't matter who it is.
Yeah, really. Exactly. And also... It's just like the whole thing is just like a souped up Aon risk reward. I don't think they give a fuck about it. It's not Aon risk reward. The £1 million they get for the risk reward for Aon, it would be really risk reward if they then went into this casino and they were forced to put it on a number and say, that's risk reward. Go chuck your £1 million on a number and see how, if you don't win and get it back, that's really risk reward. But the knock-on effect of this, of course, sorry, I'm on a bit of a rampage because I just don't like it. The knock-on effect of this, of course, is the European Tour. So what incentive now is there of the top European, as if it wasn't a lure enough to go to the States? Like, now, if you are one of the most popular European tour players and you can go over to, you know, America, and on top of all the extra money, you can go to this. I think this is going to have an impact on the European tour as well. And I don't know.
I feel like, that's a fair point. I think the European tour has been in decline for some time, and not only is it just the strength of field that there is over in America, but also I think the variety of courses. A lot of top pros will just say, yeah, in Europe, they're all just pretty much the same. And it's hard to see, you know, with the exception of Valderrama, I don't know if there's courses in Europe that maybe offer the same tests as, say, a Harbour Town or a Pebble Beach, or, you know, just some of the variety that you get on the PGA Tour. So, yeah, the European Tour point, I get it. I just think the sad reality there is it is very much in decline. Anyway, where do we all stand on this? I mean, it seems to me that, Mills, you're pretty much dead against it. Sam, what's your opinion? In summary,
I think the concept is a decent one, if I'm honest, but I think the execution of it is poor. So
what would you change?
I wouldn't do it as a season level bonus with just one off slug. I wouldn't index it so heavily to the I wouldn't index it so heavily to just such a few players. I get there needs to be that, but I think there should be a tail. I also would be fascinated to see how this stuff shakes down in the sort of 50 to 150 bracket. So, you know, there's really interesting golfers out there. People like Phil Mickelson, for example, who, you know, I may not be in the world top 10. So I'd, you know, and there's kind of, you know, probably less obvious examples within that. And I'd kind of like it to be almost event to event. So you gave a really good example of the Bryson thing. That was brilliant for the game because it was really interesting for people who don't watch golf. So imagine having that stuff week in, week out, where there was some level of coverage. It would be quite interesting to see.
I mean,
I'm thinking off the top of my head here, but Christ, there's enough data on this stuff. Week in, week out was the most entertaining part of the week, and that then drives an event level thing, irrespective of who's the winner. And I'm not saying it's got to be, you know, like Harry Higgs dancing to go and collect a ball for his hole in one, or you know, whatever random thing's gone on that week. But I think there is something to reward entertainment value in the game, because we all say it, bloody hell, we run a golf podcast, probably the best golf podcast in the UK, some of our listeners would say. And yet we join and we go, I didn't watch all of it. Yeah, I couldn't quite bring myself to watch all the golf this weekend. Mm-hmm. Well, in there lies the problem. So you've got to find a way of making it entertaining, haven't you?
Yeah, I also think there's just a level of realism there, though. Like, watching the golf all weekend is an absolutely mammoth commitment.
Yeah, but you
whereas
get my
a,
point.
A football match is 90 minutes. So, yeah, I get your point, though. I think we know, Mills, you're absolutely dead against it.
I just think there's better spends of money. And I don't think, you know, maybe it's the lefty in me, but it's why would you make the richer players richer? You know, it's just like there's better ways to spend that money. And it's not, I don't think it is also as easy as the sort of parachute payment things you get in football, where, you know, if you don't get your tour card renewed, well, you know, happy days, here's £1 million anyway, because you gave it a good go, but you're not good enough. Like I don't know what the answer is, but I just don't think what they've done is right.
Yeah. And I think broadly speaking, I'm probably in the same camp as you, in that, yeah, I think one of the big attractions with golf to many people, I mean, it's that old analogy, or that trite saying about it being a little microcosm of life, and the idea that with golf, it's a sport where you're measured against very objective criteria. And if you are good enough, you'll rise to the top. And in this day and age, that means earning a shit ton of money. Why do you need to add more to that pie?
You know, like,
but at the same time though, I absolutely get Sam's point about driving engagement and growing the game. And if that's through getting the best players in the world to do more exciting things and getting people like driver Bryson to carry a driver 360 over a cape hole, then
you're
gonna
stop using my template or old terminology now, young man.
Maybe there's something to it. Maybe there is something to it.
There's also not that many people that have come out and spoken out against this, because I think there's a level of acceptance among the players. And let's face it, that's who this impacts. This doesn't impact us. Like, we can have an opinion, but
no one's going to say, can I not have this money, please? Are they? Turkeys don't vote for Christmas.
No, but there's players who haven't got a cat in hell's chance. Yeah, but there's players like Billy Horschel, who's never going to get his hands on a penny of that as long as it's going to 10 players. And he's like, I don't have any issue with it. There's 10 guys out there. They bring the cash. They are bigger personalities in the game than everything else really combined. And as a result, I don't have an issue with it. They're the reason we're teeing it up for this amount of money.
Yeah.
But that's the reality,
I do worry, though, whether we get more Instagram fodder like Ian Poulter hitting a chip shot through two open windows of his Ferrari California or something like that.
Some more of Henrik Stenson's socks or whatever he does at a weekend.
Yeah. I mean, it could just be an absolute opening of the floodgates on people like
I would like to Ian see Poulter. That, though. Wouldn't
yeah,
you?
Hopefully, maybe would knife a wedge through his Ferrari, now and then. That could be quite entertaining.
Did you see it when Thomas Bjorn was doing an Instagram thing on
that? That was unreal.
He shanked one through his patio door.
Yeah. Teaching people how to chip, chipping technique, and he's just socketed one. Yeah. Yeah. Well, anyway, I think
it would be nice, wouldn't it? Maybe they could incentivize it to a level where they were absolutely craving, like professional golfers were absolutely craving followship, asking for it relentlessly. Maybe, like Rory McIlroy ending up doing his own golf podcast and, YouTube channel and stuff. It'd be amazing to see, wouldn't it?
I'm not sure it would, actually. I feel like it would shatter the illusion a little bit, wouldn't it? I mean, we put them on these pedestals and to hear them try and run a podcast, they just come crashing down to earth.
Interesting debate, though.
But no, we did say it was going to be short and sharp. I wanted to rant, and I think I managed to do my rant successfully.
And on that note, Tom, have we got anything to look forward to?
We're starting the new YouTube series, England's Golden Age Wonders, which should be releasing very, very shortly. And we're starting with the wonderful course that is Rye Golf Club.
That's kind of where it starts, isn't it, really? I think Golden Age, really, in many respects, Colt's first design. Very much ground zero for England's most influential and prolific golf course architect. And you can look forward to that hitting your YouTube channel on Monday at 7 p.m.
Monday at 7 p.m.
We'll see you there.
Until then, guys, thank you for listening. Apologies if we've offended anyone, and we will see you next time.
Adios. Watch this.